You're listening to The Point. This hour, we've been talking about keeping the peace with your partner while staying at home during the pandemic. But for those with a partner who is abusive physically, emotionally, or sexually, staying at home may not be the safest place. What are the options for survivors of domestic violence who need to leave home at this time? Joining us is Lisetta Hirsch Putnam, Executive Director of the Independence House. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. It was reported in the Falmouth Enterprise last week that Falmouth police have seen an increase in domestic violence calls. Do we know if that increase is happening in other towns across the region?
I don't know that specifically because we haven't asked the police that question, but I think in general, nationally, they're reporting domestic violence calls are up. So I'm assuming that Cape Cod would be no different to the police. As far as Independence House is concerned, we initially saw a decline in calls, and we can maybe talk more about that later if you'd like. And we believe, you know, obviously it has to do with the fact that people are in close quarters and can't get out and have been asked to stay at home. Right. What I will say, though, is that in the last week that I have heard from my staff, and we understand that the calls have gone up slightly. And what's significant, though, is that the incidents being described are more severe.
So what are you hearing from those who are experiencing domestic violence now? Are these new cases where abuse hasn't happened before, or are these cases with, you know, where tenuous situations have become volatile, or maybe it's a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. One example I can think of that's a new one that happened just as we were going on stay at home was a woman that had been with her partner for a long time. When I say new, I mean it's new to us. The abuse had been going on, but she had never reached out for help before. So new case to Independence House, but ongoing for, you know, for the client herself. And of course, we have worked with people who are now seeing situations escalate that they're in. Even folks that have made attempts to get a restraining order are also being have unwanted visits, I would say. So a violation of restraining orders. As well. But most of the issue is concerning just people having to stay home and not really being able to, you know, safety plan in ways that are more confidential or private, or even to just get out and maybe make an appointment to come to Independence House or talk to someone. So we're working with that to the best of our ability and the survivor of domestic violence ability as well.
Are police modifying how they handle domestic violent cases at this time? For example, not going into homes? And if so, I would think this would put survivors at greater risk, right?
I believe that the police are considered essential workers, so they still have to respond to domestic violence calls. And how each department or, you know, city or town handles that, again, I think they are determining that based on what they get when they're at the scene.
What about, do we know if there's been any changes in how these cases are being investigated or prosecuted at this time?
Well, we do know that the courts at this time are closed. I mean, we don't often have a lot of domestic violence prosecutions per se. What we experience more are people that are might be trying to obtain a restraining orders order. And as far as Independence House is concerned, we're still able to work with our clients, whether they no matter what town they live in, on trying to help. Yeah, that's still in effect. We have a system in place to help people with that. And they if they call our hotline. Or a safe plan number, they will get help. As far as how the police are investigating cases, I can't imagine. I mean, again, I can't speak for the police, but I can't imagine that they would be doing anything different than they normally do. I would imagine they're taking the same precautions as the rest of us have to. But those cases still have to be responded to.
Yeah. Many police departments have domestic violence liaisons. Can you describe their role?
Yes. On the Cape, we have, specifically, we have a domestic violence liaison in Falmouth. We can talk about that, but we also have one in Mashpee, Barnstable, Dennis. I believe those are all the ones that come to mind. And really, the role of the liaison, depending on the department, oh, I forgot Yarmouth also has one. They're really there to do follow-up call, with individuals who the police respond to. So if the police goes out on a call and they, it's a domestic violence call, the role of the liaison is to do any type of follow-up work that's required and to really provide ongoing support. Some liaisons would refer to Independence House as well, depending to help the domestic violence survivor to meet whatever other needs might become apparent as a result of the domestic violence. But it's really just to have a supportive presence to work with domestic violence that a law enforcement officer wouldn't be focused on. It's just a different role from law enforcement specifically. It's more of an advocate and support role.
Yeah,
now, and they're usually they're right in the police department as well. Yeah,
yeah. In many domestic violence cases, children are present. Describe the immediate and the long term impacts on children when they're witnesses to this violence.
Well, again, like with any experience, for some children, it can be trauma inducing, meaning that they find it traumatic. So if a child has a trauma response, that could be immediate and it's also long going. So things that we see are things such as, depending on the age of the child, bedwetting, you know, acting out in school, academic suffering, emotion, dysregulation in a child's emotions, and dysregulation, I mean, just not being able to be in control of themselves. We may even see some children, you know, being violent themselves, just, you know, sort of imitating what they've seen at home. But it's also a way that they've learned how to express their feelings, you know, not knowing anything else, or just not really having an outlet or a method to cope with what they've seen. And I also want to say that some children, depending on the family situation and what other supports are around, may be able to are able to recover, of course, more from that. And we do have a child witness to violence program at Independence House, and we understand and we know that with some type of intervention or support, and again, depending on the child, it could be one or three times, and for other children, it could be ongoing. That with some support about how to process what they've seen, to process their feelings, to come up with some coping skills, to be able to identify safe adults around them, and to understand that what's happening in their home is not their fault. We know that with intervention, those things are possible to be addressed, and that children can grow up and have, you know, happy, healthy lives and do well, but they do need that support.
Yeah. You mentioned that initially that the calls to Independence House were decreasing, and now we're seeing a bit of an increase. And I'm thinking we have, we're not interacting with a lot of the mandated reporters. You know, there aren't teachers, kids are not in school, so teachers aren't seeing what could be potential problems, or coworkers. Or do you sort of attribute that decrease in calls to the fact that there aren't all of these people around some of these cases to help? Yeah.
Yes, I think so. I think so because, as you said, teachers are mandated reporters. And if a child is in school and something seems, you know, out of place or disruptive, or just a child is being abused, then, yeah, a teacher would most likely, or the school social worker would most likely make that call. I think also other settings, whether that be a pediatrician's office or any mandated reporter, you know, to name them all, I definitely think lack of eyes on these children, regardless. Even neighbors are not mandated reporters, but we certainly know that neighbors sometimes call and have a role in that as well. And but if everyone is sort of keeping distance, you're not necessarily out playing as kids, or you're not at your neighbor's home, it's just a little bit more isolating. And I think that, of course, contributes to that as well, to the decrease in calls.
There's a common misperception that victims of domestic violence fit a certain profile, but that's not reality. Anyone can be a victim, correct?
Right. Domestic violence victims come from all walks of life. They're all, races, all ages, all cultures. They speak English. They speak other languages. They're wealthy. They're not wealthy. So it's across a wide spectrum. I think for Independence House, because we provide free services, we may tend to see people that are in need of free services, but we also see people that are from the other end of the spectrum who may have resources, but because of the type of work that we do, they will reach out to us for services because that's obviously what our mission is to work with survivors of domestic violence. But yes, it is a misconception to think that domestic violence victims are only one type of person.
Right. So what are the options for individuals who need to leave the home right now? Are shelters accepting people? Things have changed, but do we have
Yes.
the same options?
I think that technically, yes, shelters are accepting people, but I think there are a lot of, I think it depends on the shelter, for instance, and whether or not what's happening in the shelter. So, for example, if there are people in the shelter who have COVID-19 and the shelter doesn't have a response to that in terms of like a quarantining area, it just depends on the size of the shelter. But domestic violence shelters are still accessible to victims. But what I will say, Mindy, and I'm sure you know this just from being from the work that you do, that on a good day across the state of Massachusetts, that there aren't enough shelter beds available anyway.
Right.
And I think with this pandemic, it hasn't increased shelter. What it's done is probably decreased shelters. And I think it's harder for people to even get to those shelters or get access, you can't go directly to a shelter, but to make the arrangements to go. But I, as a field and as Independence House, we are committed to working with people to make other arrangements, and that's a whole range that that I wouldn't want to say on the air necessarily.
Right.
But we're not without options.
Yeah, I was going to say. So it's safe to say that there are other interventions that
yes.
you can help somebody who's in trouble. So just hearing
right.
that there might not be a space in a shelter for you should not deter you from seeking help.
No, because there are also other options besides shelter. I mean, we may be able to do something like a safe home type of mm-hmm. situation. So we have to assess each individual situation with them. But I want anyone that's listening to this that is experienced domestic violence, and if you can get to a phone, to call our hotline. We also have a chat line, and if you can get to our website, just look, we have a lot of information on our website at independencehouse.org, and we can help in some way. I also want to say, Mindy, I know you didn't ask this, but I want to throw this in real quick. There are other impacts with COVID-19, as we know, because of unemployment, not as much access to financial resources for some folks. So some people are experiencing food shortage. They might not be able to feed their families anymore. Some of our clients, survivors. So we also want to make it known that we do have resources. And if they call us, we will arrange with them to provide some food, actually, and mm-hmm. other type of resources that are helpful to them. So basic needs, we can help with that for people as well who have lost their income, who are really struggling with all the attendant impacts of COVID-19 and are victims of domestic violence. So there, it's not only shelter and safety planning, but a wide range of impact happens with domestic violence and then, compounded with COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. And what about situations with children? I know that there may be times that somebody who's suffering domestic violence thinks, I don't want to leave my children behind. You can take your children with you, right?
Oh, of course. In fact,
yeah.
In our domestic violence shelter, we certainly have women with children in our shelter, and absolutely, we would never expect anyone to leave their children at home. Nor would. So we want to make it clear that yes, bring your children.
Now, there might be situations when we are concerned about the safety of someone, especially if we can't see or talk to them easily at this time. So what do you suggest people do who might be concerned about a friend or a loved one, you know, being in a dangerous situation?
Well, there are a couple of things I want to say first. Let me answer your question this way. I would say always check in on a loved one, you know, call them. I think that people have found creative ways to do drive-bys. And for those that don't have cars, maybe walk-bys and keep a safe distance. How are you doing? You know, send a text if you're able to do that. And just find ways to stay connected. I also heard recently that the police departments can do wellness checks. So if police departments, you know, have reasons to think about doing that. So it's sort of more of a reaching out as opposed to waiting for someone to reach out. So, mm-hmm. you know, just to think of creative ways that we can just keep in touch. Hi, neighbor, how you doing? Leave a note in their mailbox or taped to their door. The other thing that I also want to recommend and just put out to a person that may use violence or abuse in a relationship, and if there are children, is to take this time of isolation to really think about the way that you as a partner or roommate can control your own behavior and make some decisions about your own control and think about your children, if you have children, and how this might impact them. So in this case, I am making an appeal to the person that's choosing to use violence and control to say that you actually do have control over your own behavior. And because your partner may be, in the home with you, consider them as well and your children and any children that are in the home, because you can make an impact with your choices as well.
Could alerting police or even Independence House put someone at greater risk? And how do we know if that might be the case?
I mean, you don't know. I mean, I think depending on the communities, I mean, Cape Cod is, of course, diverse, not as diverse as some communities. So for some communities of color, for example, they may not feel safe calling the police. And depending on the survivor's partner, yes, that might make them, you know, blame the survivor more. Why did you call the police? Depending on the situation. But the police are there as a line of protection for survivors. So we trust a survivor to kind of make her own decision or make their own decision about what they're going to do and when they need to do it. If a survivor chooses to call the police, it is because they have decided that this is the safest option for them in assessing the whole, you know, spectrum of their experience. So if they haven't called the police to date and they decide to call the police, it means that that's the best choice that they can make in that moment. So
Yeah, but I'm thinking also, if you are, you know, the relative or the person concerned, do you put your loved one at a greater risk if you are the one who calls the police?
Well, again, that's hard to say. I think the best thing to do if you're a relative and you can talk to that survivor is you can ask them, how can I support you? But my ultimate response is, if you are concerned about someone's life, or you believe that there's a risk to their safety in terms of serious injury, and you have, again, the neighbor also has to make that decision, or the mm-hmm. loved one, because if you happen to know that this person has experienced violence or is in the middle of experiencing violence, and you need to, you are concerned that they might be killed, you know, or seriously injured, it's already happening.
Yeah.
So it they're already in danger, and it changes nothing. But what I I think if someone can actually speak with a survivor before, during, or after these situations, is to understand, you know, how can I help you? What would support you in this situation? Should I call the police? I want to call the police. Should I call the police? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, my message is that I think at the end of the day, if someone is really concerned about someone's safety and they're aware that there is violence that's happening, it's already happening, and that person is in danger already. And they're already being harmed.
We will post links with the Independent House 24-hour hotline, as well as links with more information about Independence House and resources for survivors of domestic violence at our website, capeandislands.org. Lisetta Hirsch-Putnam, Executive Director at Independence House, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.